Hi, you're tuned to Truth News Radio Australia on the 5th of September 2015. Welcome to the show. Today I'm going to be covering several topics that are pretty important to me, and I'm going to start with the situation in Syria and the refugee crisis. This is an incredibly horrific situation which has developed as a result of the direct intervention and machinations of Western powers in that part of the world in order to create a power block, in order purely for political reasons, to try and isolate Russia, to create a kind of a superpower block. Unfortunately, the way this catastrophe is now going is that people are seeing this flood of refugees coming from that part of the world, and it's now turning into a story about refugees, and then it's a story about the persecution of those refugees by religious extremists. But the real causes and what really happened and how it all started are persistently ignored by all major media in the world, and it's really up to the alternative news sources to continually ram it home that this was created. And Australia, the government of Australia, under successive governments of both the Labor and the Liberal parties, had a big part to play in creating this disaster. And Australia continues to involve itself in activities which will exacerbate the problem, which will create a worse refugee problem, which will probably worsen the extremist problem. And again, it is up to the alternative media and to concerned principled individuals to stand up and point the truth out about this. And I'm pleased to say one of them, one of the people who's done that is the former Commander-in-Chief of Australia's Armed Forces, Peter Gracian. And he sent a letter to the Prime Minister, Tony Abbott. Bombing raids in Syria would be illegal and disastrous. Now, this is in the context of our Prime Minister, Tony Abbott, suggesting that Australia may get involved in bombing raids. They've been directly approached by the US to do that. And there's so many reasons why this is wrong. Let me just read to you the letter here from former ADF General Peter Gracian. Actually, this is not a direct quote of the letter, but this is an article from the ABC. The open letter suggests bombing IS targets would potentially be illegal, could strengthen the organisation and divide the Australian community. Retired General Gracian, who was the commander of the ADF from 1987 to 1993, told the World Today the move would be inviting disaster. Actually, I'm going to play to you a little from ABC's World Today, which contains the interview with General Peter Gracian. Here we go.
The former head of the Australian Defence Force, retired General Peter Gracian, has signed an open letter to the Prime Minister, Tony Abbott, opposing bombing raids in Syria. Australia is considering a request by the US to join its bombing campaign against the so-called Islamic State group in Syria. The open letter suggests bombing IS targets could strengthen the organisation and divide the Australian community. I spoke to retired General Peter Gracian a short time ago.
The central issue is that I believe this would be a strategically bad decision. In fact, I would call it strategically dumb, and I can give you the reasons for this. To commit us to a complex and confused war with a centuries-old religious conflict between the Sunnis and the Shias, the underlying issue, I think is really inviting disaster. The second point is that the Americans have already been doing extensive airstrikes for some months, and it hasn't stopped IS. And if we add our contribution to this, it will be at best a marginal increase. And I think the inevitable thing, if we are seeking some sort of victory there, is that the conflict would have to escalate to get ground operations into Syria. And if we'd already committed to airstrikes, we would be part of that escalation.
Is that why you say it would be inviting disaster, because the natural conclusion would be a ground war?
Yeah, if we want to win, whatever that means, in Syria, I think it's essential that eventually there has to be ground operations. And we would be drawn into that.
The Prime Minister, as you know, refers to IS as a death cult, and he says they've committed some appalling atrocities and that we have a moral obligation to stop them. So how would you respond to him?
I think there's no doubt that IS are committed atrocities and are altogether a very bad lot. But conceding that fact, that in itself is not an issue requiring Australian contribution halfway around the world. And I think the balance off between a moral imperative to do something about IS and the downside for Australia, the downside is much stronger. The humanitarian issue is a significant one. If we escalate the air war, there are undoubtedly going to be more civilian casualties. There'll be more refugees generated. There'll be more infrastructure damage. And eventually getting Syria back on its feet will be quite difficult.
We heard just the other day that the former commander of coalition forces in Afghanistan and Iraq, David Petraeus, said Australia should join the campaign. He said there would be a military advantage in bombing IS targets in Syria. How can it be that a former general of such high standing has got it wrong?
Well, it's a matter of opinion. I just point to the fact that the Americans have been carrying out airstrikes now for some months, and it certainly hasn't produced any decisive effect.
Your letter to the Prime Minister also cites potential legal issues. What are they?
There are two things. First of all, there is no direct threat from IS to Australia. And secondly, there is no UN cover for this that particular operation. I believe that will give them a strong indication that it would be illegal.
The government might take issue with you about that issue of whether the IS...
OK, I'll just leave it there. Those comments from the former commander of Australia's Armed Forces... very, very important. And let me just go through some of the key issues there. Let's start with the question of the legality, because what we're talking about here in bombing raids on Syria is another sovereign nation which has its own government. The government is under siege. There is an insurgency, but the Syrian government has not invited either Australia or the US to conduct military strikes. Now, this is indicative of the whole problem from the beginning, which is that the agenda of the Western powers has been to subvert the government of Syria from the beginning. That's how this all got started. And so the bringing in of planes to bomb in Syrian territory is just another stage of what appears to be an attempt to just overthrow a regime. It is quite evil, really, when you think about it, because what they've created, what they've unleashed, is evil in itself. And to think that there was a deliberate agenda behind this from the beginning, and it started many years ago now, it started in about 2010, when the US and other powers began a deliberate campaign of isolating and marginalizing Syria. And this, of course, was in the context of the so-called Arab Spring. The problem with refugees, of course, is that you're going to be bombing targets that are going to be killing all kinds of people. They're going to be killing a few ISIS extremists. You're going to be killing innocent people. You're going to be destroying infrastructure. You're going to be creating a bigger wave of refugees. The agenda, the strategy, like what what Peter Gration is saying is just common sense. But we have to understand that there is a different agenda at work to what either he or General Petraeus would presume to be the agenda, and it is an agenda of global domination. Now, there's another side to this which someone alerted me to, which is actually quite disturbing, because it brings in another type of manipulation which we've seen so much of, which is about climate change, into the debate about Syria. And I've got an article here from, it was published on upworthy.com, and it's kind of like a comic book style set of images which portrays the view that the Syrian crisis and everything that's happened, including the refugees and the massive numbers of people killed and the military involvement and the civil war, guess what, folks? It's all due to climate change. Trying to follow what is going on in Syria and why, this comic will get you there in 5 minutes. Wars are complex. They come out of nowhere, and all of a sudden, people you've never heard of are killing each other on the evening news. Here's what you need to know about the war in Syria. And it's not oil or religion. It's something we're all creating together. Now, this has been produced in a very slick way, Syria's Climate Conflict, written by Audrey Quinn. And it basically makes the bold assertion that that the whole Syrian crisis developed out of a climate catastrophe, where it says between 2006 and 2011, over half the country had suffered under the worst drought on record. So what they're basically saying is, it's not about any of these political things. It's just about this climate business. And of course, this again is a, if this actually becomes a dominant meme, this leads us into a really hideous scenario where the global conflicts are sold to us as a product of climate change. And there's been hints about this in the media going back more than a decade. I've read stuff about it where they say, well, climate change will create war and strife. Of course, there's no evidence. There's no scientific, not a shred of scientific evidence to back up what's being said here. And it's done in a comic book format, which, again, is dumbed down. It's like oriented, aimed at children, really. But, and then it's just got all these pictures, and you can see it, oh, it all started from the terrible drought, and then people got angry, and they wanted someone to blame, and so they blamed the government. See, but people will believe this. People will actually, because it provides an explanation that's more palatable to a lot of people than the truth, which is that your leaders are psychopaths, your governments are ruled by bankers who are happy to exterminate millions of people so they can secure their power. So I'll leave these notes on the show, on the website, very interesting to have a look at. Meanwhile, we're going to go to break, and when we come back, I'll be talking about something else. Stay with us. Global economy and what appears to be the unfolding economic disaster that we've all been fearing. It is now the first week of September, and we've seen these incredible swings on the stock market. We're seeing the Australian dollar plummeting. We're seeing the US dollar rallying. We're seeing massive volatility in global markets. And what is really going on is the question that is on everyone's mind. Now, I've got a a website here that I was alerted to, armstrongeconomics.com, run by a man by the name of Martin Armstrong, who's somewhat infamous in American news because he went to prison for a number of years for apparently manipulating the markets, and there was a big saga over his apparent contempt of court. He was in prison for many, many years, but many regard him as being extremely on the money when it comes to money. And he has this blog, and I'm going to just open it here and read to you a little from Armstrong Economics. Our mission is to provide a public service for the average person to comprehend the global economy and for professionals to access the most sophisticated international analysis available. The key to knowledge today remains the global capital flows and comprehension of how capital rushes around the world. It is this interaction on a global scale that produces the real booms and busts. Bull markets only take place when capital flows target one nation focused into one particular sector. Okay, there's a lot of detail here. He's been writing recently about the US dollar, and I'm going to just quickly open that article. This man appears to have an interesting slant, which is a little different to a lot of what the people are saying, you know, on the news and even alternative people. And this particular article is interesting. The euro and why the dollar will not be dethroned. In the eurozone, Mario Draghi has announced that his quantitative easing has failed to produce inflation, as everyone assumed. After 9 months of buying various government debt, the economy is still contracting, and their inflated inflation numbers are coming in at 0.01%. And just skipping through here to the key points. He says here that the model he is producing believes that there will be a massive US dollar rally. Others are swearing the dollar will collapse and the US will lose its reserve currency status. They are wrong. It is a shame, for we are about to enter a period when there will be not a single asset class standing without its ardent supporters suffering huge losses. The higher the dollar rallies, the more likely it is to create an economic storm and losses. If the dollar declines, then all those who issued dollar debt will win. How do we create an economic downturn with a declining dollar? Corporate profits will rise, not fall, and the $9 trillion in dollar-denominated debt will reap huge profits instead of losses. Then there are the crazies who cannot see the forest for the trees. They send in emails saying that I'm wrong and that the dollar will collapse because Russia is abandoning the dollar. But Russia is not a major holder of dollars. A rise in the dollar will inflict the greatest losses worldwide, and then the cry for an independent reserve currency will emerge. A declining dollar will not dethrone it. And I just think that's a very, very interesting different angle on what is going on. Because, yes, we are seeing this rally in the US dollar, and we're seeing the US stock markets rallying, and US power has never been greater than it is now. But what's been created, what's been done by the quantitative easing programs has really devalued money. It's undermined the basis of the wealth of so many people. And it's not just in the US, it's around the world. So currently, with these swings, what we're seeing is just massive, massive instability. And that could be the beginning of a collapse, but it could be that we're moving towards a new phase, which is yet hard to predict as to what it will actually unfold. But anyway, I recommend you to have a look at armstrongeconomics.com. It's an interesting website. And just to tell you a little bit more about the man, Martin Armstrong. This is from Wikipedia. In September 1999, Armstrong faced prosecution by the Securities and Exchange Commission and the Commodity Futures Trading Commission for fraud. During that trial, Armstrong was imprisoned for over 7 years for civil contempt of court, one of the longest-running cases of civil contempt in American legal history. In August 2006, Armstrong pleaded guilty to one count of conspiracy to commit fraud and began a 5-year sentence. Anyway, so I'm not necessarily recommending advice from a convicted felon, but this guy seems to have some interesting views and obviously a different slant on what is actually going on. Now, folks, I want to address in today's show another rather complex topic. Something that I've spent quite a bit of time looking into, mainly because I've been alerted to it on my Facebook feeds. And it's one of those topics that is difficult for me to cover because a lot of people see it as me undermining the noble efforts of truthers and not standing loyal to the truthers and truth seekers and conspiracy theorists who are trying to bring truth and justice. And yet I have to do it. You know, I've done it on several other topics. And when I see people, even if they're standing in the name of truth or whatever, if they're talking what appears to be untruths, if they're spreading rumors and lies, I have to call it out and say it for what it is. I have to stand up for what I believe in because that's what this show was founded in. It wasn't founded in the idea of simply getting together with your mates and kind of echoing each other's prejudices. That has never been what I'm on about. And what I'm about to talk about is the Virginia TV shooting where the two journalists were killed live on air, which a lot of people now are saying was a hoax. And there's just been a plethora of YouTube videos go up, a lot of articles popped up all over the place. Very similar in vein to the aftermath of the Sandy Hook shooting, and one of the central pieces of so-called evidence that is raised by some of these people is the idea that the victims' relatives and friends who've been interviewed are not showing an appropriate amount of grief on the TV. You know, they're not crying. They don't look sad enough. And this is the main reason why I've decided to speak out about it, because this type of rumor-mongering and attacking people with no evidence is a complete betrayal of, I guess, the integrity of what movements like the 9/11 Truth Movement and movements that I'm involved in on this show to bring truth and justice about vaccine issues and climate change and various things is all about. We counter lies and disinformation with evidence and facts. That's what we do. But unfortunately, these YouTube trolls are simply using innuendo and slurs as part of their tactic of information war. So when we come back from the break, I will continue to talk about the truth of Israel history. We'll be right back. Hi, you're with Truth News Radio Australia, and my name's Hereward Fenton, and it is a great pleasure to be doing this show for you today. And I do apologise for big gaps in broadcasts of this show. I've had a lot of difficulties this year, but getting back on track now and hoping to pump out a lot of shows over the next few months. So for those subscribers who've actually paid to be subscribers to this show, I will make it up to you. I will continue. I will do the best I can. I can't guarantee that anything I produce is going to be of astounding journalistic integrity. I mean, I will make it as integrated. What's the correct noun there for integrity? Integrated. I will make it as true and as correct as I possibly can. But it is always hard to be 100% perfect in what you do in this type of area. So getting back to the Virginia shooting hoax. As I said earlier, the videos that are coming out really are just troll videos. And unfortunately, what's happened is people who are, I guess, a little easy to manipulate, people who don't have a strong concept of, I guess, the difference between empirical research and gossip, can get carried away with these ideas. And it appears to be just a weakness in human nature that, you know, you throw mud, you throw enough mud, some of it sticks. And we see it in the truth-seeking community as much as anywhere else. People just get carried away. And it's like the accusation itself just becomes, has a certain momentum. You know, when you accuse someone, the fact that that person's accused almost is evidence in itself. And, of course, these people producing the videos are the ones who are really at fault. And I think what they're doing is quite evil. And I'm a huge supporter of research. I'm a huge supporter of questioning official theories. But as soon as you start advancing as evidence an idea that, you know, someone on TV who didn't cry is therefore a fake and a liar and a phony and a crisis actor and is not a real person, you've digressed into rumor mongering and really political dirty tactics that just has no place in either journalism or research. Now, I want to play to you now a video made by a young man from the UK who's actually been on this show before. His name's Keelan Balderson. He's got his own website, wideshut.co.uk. And he's put out a video that is his analysis and debunking of some of the hoax theories. So I'll just play some of that for you and then maybe give you some of my commentary as well. Here we go. Just waiting for that to load, and it should be starting any second now.
Within minutes of the apparent murder of a reporter and cameraman in Virginia this week, so-called truthers declared the shooting an obvious false flag hoax fake video staged by the government to foment a race war and create a reason to take people's guns. Ignoring the fact that there's already plenty of excuses to take people's guns and there's already strong racial tensions in America right now, if we assume the incident was fake, what evidence is there? And are there any other reasonable explanations? How did they not see the shooter coming? In the shooter's video, we can see that the reporter does see him coming. Only it's before he pulls the gun out for the first time and she doesn't look down. As a professional reporter doing a live TV interview, she will have learned by now to ignore bystanders. How many reports have you seen on TV where people are literally jumping all over the place and the reporter continues as if there's nobody there? It's their job to ignore the surrounding distractions. So why did she not see the shooter coming? She did. But then she decided to ignore him because that's her job. And it's not like she expected to be shot today and was looking out for a shooter and a gun.
I just want to make a point here. This is actually what he's saying here is very, very important. when you're doing an interview, and I've done quite a number of interviews, it is very hard sometimes to remain focused. It takes professionalism, it takes practice to remain focused and not be distracted by your surroundings. And to do that, you actually have to make an effort. And this is something people will not understand unless they've tried it themselves. You have to make an extra effort to ignore external inputs, because you've got to focus on the interview. You've got to focus on the questions that you're asking your interview subject. And if you lose concentration, even for 2 seconds, the interview may end up being clumsy, and that will be very bad for you, and it won't work for the purpose of what you're doing the interview for. So far more so than any other situation, this is a situation where it is quite correct that the interviewer was ignoring her surroundings. But it is odd that neither of them reacted to the man having the gun out. But then again, the lady who was being interviewed said that there were bright lights shining directly in her face. There may have been too much glare for her to have even seen anything. And the lady doing the interview is side on, so she took one quick look at the man before he pulled his gun out. Then he had his gun out. She was deliberately not looking at him, deliberately ignoring him, so she could focus on her interview. That is a completely plausible explanation. It's not 100% satisfying to me either, but it is completely plausible. So I'll just continue with Keelan Bullison's analysis.
Furthermore, the cameraman is panning his camera from a shot of the streets below and has his back to the shooter at all times, and the lady being interviewed is slightly turned away from the shooter, listening intently to the question she is being asked by the interviewer.
And you all are trying to get more and more people and more business leaders involved in this. And
simply put, all of their attention was focused on the live interview, not some bystander who they had no reason to believe was going to shoot them. The shooter's hand is white. Is it? Is it really? It's tanned at the very least. I look at my hand and I look at that hand, definitely different skin tones. And that's before making allowances for lighting and the colour and the contrast of the video itself and the compression before it was uploaded. Answer me this. Suppose somebody was faking the shooting to blame it on a black man. Why wouldn't they just use a black man? And if you actually look closely at the footage from the news report's perspective, for a split second, you do see the shooter, a black man. The shooter's wearing black, and then he's wearing blue. This is taken from comparing the blue sleeve we see from the shooter's perspective to the brief clip of the shooter from the news camera's perspective. When you actually watched the news footage in motion, however, rather than just the screen cap that's doing the rounds, they're clearly both blue. And other screen caps also show blue. Overall, the news footage is just darker than the shooter's footage. And again, if this was fake, why not just have the man wear blue the whole time? But there was no blood, and how can she run away without collapsing? First of all, this isn't a video game or a horror film, so don't expect blood to be squirting at the cameras. Secondly, we don't really know where she was hit, or if she was hit by those initial 3 bullets. They could have grazed her, they could have hit her in a place that wouldn't immobilize the body. People do run when they've been shot. If they didn't, we wouldn't have any shooting survivors, would we? She's also wearing red and black, not the best colours if you're trying to spot wounds. She's turned around within 2 seconds, and the shooter's own hand is hiding where the impacts would have been anyway. And for all those looking out for shell casings, you never see shell casings in shooting videos, just go have a look. It's a frame rate issue, you don't see the bullets either. And in this case, the shell casings would have popped out of view anyway. If we take a closer look, the shooter emerges from behind the cameraman, so he's at an awkward angle to begin with. He may even be holding his own camera in his left hand, which is going to reduce his aim. Ever tried doing 2 things at once?
Okay, we're going to break. You're with Truth News Radio Australia. I will be back to discuss more on this topic. when we come back from the break. Stay with us.
Happens in terms of creating wars is a mind manipulation technique called problem reaction solution. And it works like this. First of all, you create the problem, but you get someone else to be blamed for it. You then report that problem through the media in the way you want it reported. You get the public to react to your problem by saying something must be done, this can't go on, what are they going to do about it?
Hi, welcome back. You're with Truth News Radio. And I was just playing you there some of Keelan Balderson's research on the WDBJ Virginia shooting hoax claims, which are rampant on the internet at the moment. I won't play the whole thing. It's worth having a look. We'll put it on the show notes for you. All these are issues about the blood and the gun and should she have seen the gun and all these things. You know, they're all valid questions. I don't actually have a problem with people being a little suspicious and asking questions. Where I draw the line, though, is actually at the claims that the people who are connected to this, who are interviewed on television, are fakes and liars. I mean, that really is very, very cruel and insulting and defamatory. It is just a terrible thing to say about people without evidence. I mean, if you have some evidence for it, right, even any physical evidence at all, anything that would be beyond your subjective impression, maybe. But these people putting up the troll videos, they just think they're experts on analysing human behaviour. They just think, oh, I can tell from that person's behaviour that you know, that they're lying. And this is the sort of thing we saw with Chappelle Corby. We saw it with Lindy Chamberlain. And it's disgusting. I really, if you're one of the people who goes in for that, I despair because people, if you're one of those types of people, You're not leading us towards a better society. You may think you are. You may think you're part of the vanguard of some very clever people that, you know, question everything and that you're going to make a change. You're not. You're actually part of the problem in society if you go in for that type of thing. What I believe is so important to improve the state of our democracy and the standard of our community is for more respect and respect for truth and respect for basic principles. And indeed, that actually leads me into the final topic I want to discuss for today, which is the importance of dialogue and respect for different points of view, but also for principles in the way you go about looking at the world. In other words, don't lead with your prejudice. Lead by having an open mind. Now, it's difficult. And, you know, as we've just seen, they're discussing the Virginia shooter hoax. There are people who just appear to be narcissistically motivated to make accusations. And you know what? I don't think these people should be locked up, or I don't believe these people should be subjected to criminal or civil penalties. I think it simply should be recognised that people who do this are not participating in the dialogue which represents democracy, and they should be ignored. That's the best way to deal with it, is that the trolls, the people who are subverting real dialogue, real communication, and the quest for truth, the people who are subverting that, whether that be internet trolls or major news networks, should be ignored. There is no point in having dialogue with people who are subverting dialogue. And in that context, I just want to kind of connect together some dots here between a number of issues which are very big at the moment, and one of them is the abortion debate. Yeah, we've seen the shocking videos that came out from the Center for Medical Progress, which have highlighted a number of the problems with abortion in the way that it is exploited for whether it's commercial or whether it is just scientific research or a bit of both. In fact, if it is scientific research, we know that's always connected to money anyway. So the question of the amount of money that they were getting for selling these fetal body parts is not really the point here. The point is that these were commodities which were considered to be valuable. And when you consider that, you realize we do have a big problem here with abortion. But in order to move forward, in order to attain a new consensus on abortion, we've got to get all the facts out on the table. We can't just follow our prejudice and have a very narrow, closed-minded position that we just argue from. You've got to actually open out and look at all the facts, right? And the facts are that abortion, the termination of a human life, is something that can be in the last week of gestation, or it can be something that happens within the first week of gestation. That all represents a termination of a human life. But we have to recognize that taking the birth control pill, which prevents an egg from being fertilized, is not murder. And we have to recognize that because it's a fact, it's not murder. Even though in many cases the birth control pill will actually produce a spontaneous miscarriage, because the hormones can actually prevent a fertilized egg from implantation, and that's part of what the chemicals do. But let's even just consider condoms, because condoms also prevent a life from being created, and each one of those sperms is a potential human being. So when we look at the abortion debate, we have to look at the full spectrum, and you have to draw a line somewhere, or you're going to have to say no condoms, no birth control pills, no interfering with any sexual act because you might be preventing a human life from coming into existence, and that's murder. And it really annoys me with the extreme right-wing pro-lifers that they won't engage with this simple fact. Is that there is a point at which we have to consider that a human being exists. And it's awkward. It's not convenient. It's awkward. But we've got to face that. And all the best evidence, all the research and imagery and everything else that's been focused on this generally would lead us to conclude that around about 8 or 9 weeks of gestation is when that kind of changeover starts to occur. And I think it's appalling that abortions are fully legal and routine right up till 25 or even 28 weeks in Australia. 25 weeks without any questions, any interference, you can go in and have a baby taken out of you. And that's wrong. But the debate needs to be, let's look at the whole issue. Let's look at all the questions and then achieve a real consensus. And I'm just going to swap over now to talking about religion, because the debate about Islam versus Christianity and whether Islam is an inherently violent, sadistic religion that suppresses people's rights and women's rights is one which continually surfaces. And it just surfaces on the basis of people led by their prejudice who are advocating a very extreme point of view and then bringing some texts to support their view, and then ignoring everything else, all the other texts and all the other religions and all the other bits of information that would show you that there's not a particular problem with one religion here. Again, it's a question of not being hidebound. I believe narcissistically hidebound by your prejudices, to just being willing to have a look around and have a look at some facts. And I believe that is because people find it easier. It's lazy. It's lazy thinking. And hatred is a lazy kind of meme to slide into, and it feels good, you know, when you can just focus your hatred against some group. This is what we have to be vigilant against. This is what we have to counteract with open debate and dialogue. And exactly the same problem applies to the environment, where we have those who believe that there is a terrible problem with global warming caused by carbon dioxide, who put forward these memes like I was showing you earlier in the show, without any facts, without any evidence, just saying that, oh, the war in Syria is all caused by climate change. This is extremely dishonest. This type of thinking and this behavior, which we just see in so many different groups, where dishonesty has become just another way of getting what you want, you know, and they actually believe that they're doing a good thing. There's a confusion about values, a confusion about truth. And of course, the last one I just want to add to that is the vaccine debate, where we see exactly the same thing, where we have extremist points of view. And I should say, in all these cases, there are extremists. And I, you know, I say that in abortion, there are the extremists, the people who basically would probably have condoms made illegal, you know. The religious debate, the people who want to persecute other religions, whether it's the ISIS extremist or the anti-Muslim extremists. Environmental debate, the extremists who want to basically kill people who put out carbon dioxide. And, of course, the extremists who want to mandate government vaccination and destroy free will, destroy the people's right to choose. The only way to counteract extremism is by fostering debate and communication. And that's what we're doing on this show. I'm going to be back very soon with another show, and we'll continue in that vein. It's been great talking to you today. Truth News Radio Australia, signing out.